Hello, once again, it's Anna Rose with the latest sci-fi and fantasy, light and dark, excursions into the unknown podcast on Thursday, September 10th, 2020. I'm just sort of checking in if that's cool with you. I'm glad that I've got the podcast back up and going again. I like that I can reach folks this way. If you got it in you and have an interest in doing your own podcast, I cannot recommend it highly enough. I've been writing as much as I'm able, but the massive heat wave over this last weekend in California, specifically San Diego, California, sort of made that pretty much impossible as I didn't have access to air conditioning. Thus, all I wanted to do really was sleep. It made for an uncomfortable three-day weekend, to say the least. I'd much rather have fun, but then also in these days of COVID, I try to be safe and stay in anyways, but still. But now I'm in an air-conditioned office with really nice surroundings so I can work on my book and also get this podcast done and out to you. While I'm working on Lucy Roads to Recovery, I'm slowly beginning to do what passes as planning for the third book in the series, Lucy Roads to Redemption. It continues the story of Lucy and Fairy and Hector Rhodes, the human man who befriends the devil. Yes, I said befriends. As some of you know, I'm not into writing romances, and the closest I come to reading them is Diana Gabaldon's Outlander series. And what gets me there is the fantasy element and the historical background she has for them. She writes Claire, Jamie, and all the rest of her characters very well. My own personal rule is that if a romantic relationship occurs in one of my novels, it's incidental to the story and not the point of the story. There are plenty of people out there who do a decent job of writing romantic relationships, but I'm not one of those people. So, I'll leave it to the romance professionals. I'll stick with my urban non-romance fantasies, devils, demons, vampires, were-lions, and other things that sometimes go bump in the night. Up next, about half of chapter one of my first novel, Shifra, that was published on January 30th, 2012. It's the story of a 400-year-old vampire called Shifra. And I really hope that you enjoy it. And now a snippet of chapter one of what was my very first novel, published in January of 2012, Shifra. I held him close, looking for all the world like a mother, or even a lover. If it were not for certain rather glaringly obvious elements of this particularly touching scene, it might not generate further suspicion from passers-by. Thus, I was glad that this was a fairly well-abandoned area at this time of night. I absently stroked the man's back and rocked back and forth, his head still clutched close to my chest, as I hummed tunelessly, a deranged lullaby to accompany the poor bastard into his terminal sleep. My meal had been fairly light tonight, as he had already lost a considerable amount of blood by the time I found him. I had been drawn to him by the faint sound of his moans and the salty sweet aroma of his blood that was carried on the faint breeze. His murderer was already long gone, which was a shame, as I could have feasted on that one without being self-conscious about it in the least. I certainly would not be spending these, his last few moments on the earthly plane, waiting until he passed beyond the veil. What a shame, as I would have had to settle for what was available. These days I do try to feed on the human stains of society as much as possible, but I have not always been so careful in my dining. There was a time when my choices were so limited that I was unable to pick and choose who would make my unfortunate acquaintance. Yes, my conscience would often prick me as I fed on a father, son, daughter, or an innocent lover, after bringing him to the very height of excitement, when the heart pounds and blood rushes throughout the body in anticipation of the release to come. As I'm unable to be quite so carefree in this part of the world, my appetite is rarely sated, but I would like to think that I'm cleaning up the streets a bit during those times when I take the worst of the city's criminals out of the picture. It's very easy when first you wake to darkness, as it were, to loudly proclaim that you will only feed on the scum of the earth. High ideals and all that are supposed to make us better people. In practice, however, such nobility often finds itself being quietly swept under the rug, as cruel necessity knocks us alongside our heads and points out that the grim reality of our existence is far harsher. Angels may wish to be, but that we are actually demons is our only reality. To love a vampire is to love a predator. To love a human is to love your prey. Neither situation will end well when the hunger rises and one is left with no choice. I muttered the words under my breath. I'd been taught that litany by a vampire I met during my time in colonial era, though pre-revolutionary America. I had found it to be a painful truth. Lub-dub. It was the hollow sound of the fluttering of his heart as it struggled to keep beating. one of the sounds that had alerted me to his presence in the first place, much as a hunting shark in the ocean is drawn to the splashing sounds of a wounded creature's distress, a symbol of how hard the human race has fought to survive against the bleakest adversity, when even so-called common sense might say that it's a complete lost cause. One cannot help but admire that kind of blind determination and stubborn tenacity. But then, as has been said since even before I was an infant human child, beggars cannot be choosers. So there I was, feeding from some guy who smelled of clean skin, fresh clothes, and some particularly nice-smelling cologne that I'm sure had not been cheap. This clearly was no child of the streets, and for some reason, his senseless death offended me, even if it did mean I would finally be able to feed. It was certainly not like it had been in the old days when, if one were financially fortunate or at an established and well-run haven, you could essentially visit the equivalent of a larder full of food and safely close at hand, much like human farmers keep livestock. Those humans had grown accustomed to periodic milking, as it were, in exchange for good treatment and, in the case of modern havens, a well-endowed retirement plan. Humans who served in havens were often legacies, having been brought up in the culture so they understood the need for complete discretion. They also knew the particularly draconian penalty for revealing secrets, as they were much less likely to blindly do so, as it not only affected them, but any living ancestor or child of theirs. If one were not quite so fortunate, you could hunt your prey as needed, and then leave the remains for the local carnivores, carrion birds, and insects. With few exceptions, that particular way of surviving was no longer open to the majority of vampires. Such was the case with being an old world creature existing in modern times. Lubdub. Now much of the world is not what it once was, and it's entirely too easy to be found out if you're not careful. Feeding has certain unchanging requirements, and contrary to what one sees on television and in the movies, the advent of refrigeration has not been a particular boon for my kind. For example, blood needs to be consumed while still fresh and hot from a living human body. There are no other options. The common media conceit of blood stored in wine bottles in the refrigerator is not possible, no matter how poetic and romantic it might appear to be. Once it leaves its natural human container, the blood has already begun to putrefy and is thus useless for me and my kind. And if you did not already know, blood bank bags contain an additive solution to retard clotting. It would indeed be nice to have that option. And when blood banks had first been created, many vampires had rushed to experiment, but very shortly thereafter found their bodies rather gruesomely rejecting what they had just ingested. Bagged blood might be perfect for sick humans in the hospital who are a pint or two low, but not for someone like me. You have to know something about vampire biology, or would that be necrology, as we're not actually alive, to understand how awful it can be to ingest dead, otherwise unadulterated or even non-human blood. You would actually have to be fairly desperate or deranged even to contemplate drinking non-human blood, as animals do not register as a food source to vampiric senses. It really is quite surprising that vampires have remained hidden for this long. Yes, we do occasionally make human connections and a very rare friendship, but those are scarce as hen's teeth. I haven't had a human I could truly call friend in perhaps the last 100 years, and the sum total I could boast for my entire existence as a vampire could be counted on the fingers of one hand, with some left over for rude gestures. Vampire friendships are more actions of necessity and tend to be more strong acquaintance than anything else. Yes, we do share a common condition, but vampires tend instinctively to be fairly selfish creatures where other vampires are concerned and seem to stay in close quarters only as long as is absolutely necessary. One such situation is when a vampire has brought a mortal over, and that maker keeps their child under their guidance and protection. In this relationship, the young one learns about what they are and the blessings and limitations it places upon them in a relatively safe atmosphere. Finally, some long-term vampire partnerships that border on marriage do thrive, but I know of only two that still exist. Lubdub. As it is, the majority of my kind by necessity has become solitary and far-flung in an effort to avoid overtaxing a particular area. In the unlikely event that we meet another of our kind, we are careful to ask permission to hunt. If we are in a position where we have no choice, as long-standing vampire custom of the past 150 years or so allows one vampire to kill once in a very great while, if and when one of my kind becomes thoughtless in their actions, one or two of us will come together to bring an end to the wildling before it causes irreparable harm. I participated in two such adventures over the centuries. It's not something that is at all easy to do. You are still ending someone, even though it's ultimately for the greater good and the safety of all, both vampire and human. Think of Jack the Ripper. Yes, him. The cutting was all about misdirection on his part, but he was attracting far too much attention. Thus, the greater vampire community had been forced to come together in order to permanently resolve the situation. You might be interested to know that, contrary to popular belief, Jack was not a royal. Well, at least not a contemporary one for the time. Moreover, I'm not going to tell you which royal house he belonged to. I doubt you would recognize the name anyway. And thus, I bring to a close this snippet of the first chapter of Shifra. It is available across multiple ebook platforms for a whopping 99 cents if you're interested in getting it. I certainly hope that you do consider doing so, and I welcome any and all reviews. Thanks, bunches. I hope you enjoyed the snippet of my first novel. I wrote it because I was tired of trying to find non-vampire romances and only finding stories about vampires who hated what they were. You might have been able to tell the vampire Shifra definitely doesn't have issues with what she must do to survive. It's time to bring this episode of the podcast to a close, and I want to thank you for coming by. It really means a lot to me. If you officially follow my podcast, you'll be notified of new episodes as they come available. I'll see you next time. I'm Anna Rose, and I want to thank you again for your listening and support of me, my writing, in this podcast. I appreciate it more than you can possibly know. Stay safe, be well, and my best to you and all of your loved ones. Until next time.